This is the third in our series on Bereishis, and today the topic is Yaakov's struggles. So what I did in the handout, which I gave you, the handout, I just want to look at it quickly, because it's an overview of Yaakov's life and experience in the Torah. Before we get into Yaakov, so last time we finished with Avraham's story, Avraham's journeys, the last journey being the Akedah, the end of Parshas Vayera, the binding of Yitzchak. And then the next parsha in the Torah is Parshas Chayisara, which kind of ties up loose ends on the life of Abraham and Sarah. Sarah dies, Abraham sets in motion the marriage of Yitzchak, and we see the marriage of Yitzchak with Eliezer finding Rivka. And at the end of the parsha, Yitzchak gets married, Abraham gets married again to Keturah, and then Abraham dies. And that's the end of Parshas Chayisara. And then we're also told about Yishmael's death and Yishmael's family. So we're kind of skipping that in the overview of Bereishis, not because Yitzchak is insignificant. Chalila, I would never make such a suggestion. Yitzchak just gets very little screen time in the Torah. So in the larger scheme of an overview of Bereishis, if we and four classes, if we had a fifth class, then I'd spend a whole section on Yitzchak. But in the larger scheme, because we only have the four classes, so today is focused on Yaakov. And next week is focused on Yaakov's children. So it's not meant as a slight to Yitzchak. If you want to study all about Yitzchak, read Parshas Chayisara. And actually, not Chayisara, Parshas Toldos, actually. That's really where it is. But the truth is, at the beginning of Parshas Toldos starts off Yaakov's story. And Yitzchak really only has one chapter focusing on Yitzchak's life. Okay, and that's the encounter with Avimelech and everything that goes on in Gerar, mostly, and Yitzchak becoming wealthy. Beyond that, well, Yitzchak does appear, of course, in the first part of the Parsha, being the father of Yaakov and Esav, and he does appear at the end of the Parsha with the brachos of Yaakov and Esav, the blessings where Yaakov puts on the disguise that he puts on. Anyway, so the story of Yaakov continues through there, through the blessings, and then we move on to Parshas Vayetzeh, when Yaakov moves down to Lavan's turf, which is an instruction given to him at the end of Parshas Toldos. Okay, so here we are. Look at the chart. Did you have extra copies there?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to go through it. And the key here is to understand that the numbers which are given in the column between, so on the right side you have where Yaakov is. Okay, so it says Kena'an, then Aram. Aram means when he's in Lavan's house. Kena'an is when he returns after leaving Laban's house until he goes down to Egypt at Yosef's instruction towards the end of Yaakov's life. Okay, so the numbers which are given in this chart are years which are clear from the Torah. When there is an asterisk, the asterisk means we don't know exactly when this happens because the Torah is not clear. Everybody understand? Okay, so at zero, Yaakov is born. That's when he's zero. That one's pretty obvious. Okay, the next one says, Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim, that's the asterisk. That is as they're growing up. So we don't know at what age Esav becomes a Yodea Tzayid, somebody who knows how to trap, an Ish Sadeh, man of the field, whatever that means. And Yaakov is an Ish Tam, a simple man, or somebody who, Ish Tam could be somebody who dwells in tents. I'm sorry, he's described as a Yoshev Olim. So Tam could have different meanings, I'm not going to get into now, but Yaakov is a Yoshev Olim, which likely means that he is a shepherd. At age 15, we have the death of Avraham, and we know that because Avraham dies at 175, and Yaakov and Esav are born when Yitzchak is 60. So do the math. How many years apart were Avraham and Yitzchak? Avraham was 100 when Yitzchak was born. So if Avraham was 100 when Yitzchak is born, and Avram dies at 175, and Yitzchak had Yaakov and Esav when he was 60. Okay, it's pretty obvious as well. Most Avram dies when 15. Then you have the next two asterisks. The first one says Mechiras Bechor El Yaakov, when Esav sells the birthright to Yaakov. We often assume that is taking place at the time that Yaakov is cooking something on account of the Avelos, the mourning for Avram. Okay, the lentil soup, which would mean that they're 15. But the Torah does not, in fact, tell us when that is. Next, Mishpachat Yitzchak B'Gerar, that's the second asterisk. Those are the travels and adventures that Yitzchak has in Gerar. The truth is that while that is placed in this chart over there, it could also have taken place before the births of Yaakov and Esav, which honestly would even make more sense, owing to the fact that when they go to Gerar, Yitzchak tells Avimelech that his wife is his sister, which is a point we're going to get back to in a little bit, that his wife is his sister, which would be a much harder sell if they've got a couple of twins in tow. So I'm not really sure, even though the Torah tells us this story chronologically after the births of Yaakov and Esav, although they could be living out of the house, although it's not so clear that they're living out of the house on account of other factors. Anyway, at age 40, that's when Esav marries the daughters of Ches, the Chiti women, and we know that because Torah tells us that Esav was 40. And what's the difference in age between Yaakov and Esav? Thank you. Correct. That was a trick question. Okay. If Esav is 40, that means Yaakov is 40. Okay. Some of the things which are listed in here are the deaths of other characters, and it's just a simple matter of mathematics in terms of the information that we're given about them to know when they died. So here, and I didn't make this chart, but it mentions that when Yaakov was 50, Shem, the son of Noach, died. When Yaakov was 63, Ishmael dies, and we know that because Ishmael was 137 when he dies, and Ishmael was 14 years older than Yitzchak, which is also just evident in the Bereishis chapters that describe this. And so if Ishmael is 137 when he dies, that makes Yitzchak 123 at that time. And if Yitzchak is 123 again, 60 years older than Yaakov, that makes Yaakov 63. The next two asterisks are the brachos. That's when Yaakov and Esav have the blessing issue. We often, we suggest that Yitzchak is giving the blessing around that time, and owing to other factors of the math that happen later, and which is suggestive as well, because you know Rashi mentions that Yitzchak chooses to give the blessings when he's 123 because he's within 5 years of time of the death of his mother. And within 5 years of the time of the you know the age of one's parent, Rashi says you have to think about you know putting your house in order. So, but I like to think, although I can't prove this because it happens afterwards, at least insofar as the way the Torah presents it, that you know after Yitzchak suggests to Yaakov to go marry the daughter of Laban, Esav realizes that it's not such a good idea to marry the daughters of Canaanite families, and so he goes and marries the daughter of Ishmael.
Can I interrupt for 1 second? What are the in the parentheses? What does that mean? Like,
that's giving you the source. Okay. What chapter and verse?
Okay.
So Brachos is chapter 27 and chapter 28, verses 1-5.
Okay.
That's the source in the Torah. So anyway, my question is. Is Yitzchak thinking about death because his brother already died? Okay, which is a possibility, because if the brachos take place at that time. Or does Ishmael have a heart attack as Esav marries his daughter? So I'm not really sure about that one. But anyway, but it's all around the same time. Next, Azivas Yaakov es Be'er Sheva. That's the second asterisk there. Right at the turning point for when it switches from the timeline on the right, from Canaan to Aram. That's when Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, goes towards Charan, and he has a dream that's with the famous ladder in Beit El. Next, he's 77. That's when he arrives at Charan. And we know this going backwards based on how old Yaakov is when he shows up in Egypt. So these numbers are not given to us in the Torah, but what we are given is Yosef's age when he stands before Paro, Yosef's age when he is sold, and how much time from the time that Yosef stands before Paro and tells Paro there's going to be 7 years of plenty and then there are 2 years of famine by the time Yaakov comes down. So we know that Yosef was in Egypt for 22 years by the time his father shows up. And when Yaakov shows up, Paro asks him how old he is, and we're told that he's 130. So if Yaakov's 130, that means that Yosef was born when Yaakov was 91, and that's how you get all this information. Yosef was born when Yaakov was 91, and Yosef was born at the end of the 7 years after Yaakov marries Leah and Rachel, which means that Yaakov married them when he was 84, and he started working for 7 years, 7 years prior to that, which means that he was 77 when he started working. So that's how we get these numbers, which are so clear in the text So clear on the chart, rather. 77 is when Yaakov comes to Haran and starts to work. 79 is, again, the death of Aver, which we get from other information from Parshas Noach. 84, Aver was like a grandson of Shem, something like that. He's a descendant of Noach. We sometimes, maybe you've heard the phrase, the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. Yeah. Okay, there's a study place, which is, I once saw an article saying how the yeshiva of Shem and Aver is the answer that the rabbis came up with for any time they had a gap in time which they couldn't account for. So like, where's Yaakov from 63 to 77? And they say, yeshiva of Shem and Aver.
I was going
to
ask you about that.
Right, okay, well, I'm not going to go into that. I found that theme compelling, saying that it's just an answer. You know, where does Moshe go for all the time that he disappears? Does he go to yeshiva, Shem and Aver? I mean, he has to become Rosh Yeshiva somehow. Right? What does that mean? What were they studying? Monotheism? Okay? I mean, I guess it was philosophy, whatever. I don't know. Anyway, 79 is the death of Aver. 84 is the completion of the first 7 years of service, and then Yaakov marries Leah, and then a short time later he marries Rachel. Next, the asterisk talks about the birth of his children from Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah takes place over a 7 year period, and then 91 is when Yosef is born. It's at that point in time that Yaakov asks Lavan that he wants to leave, or at least earn a living, and he starts to work for Lavan, and we're told he works for Lavan for 6 years, and that's why at 97, Yaakov leaves. And there's a small asterisk there on that same line of 97, telling us that he meets Esav. That's when Esav comes with the 400 men, but we don't know how much time passes from when he leaves until he meets Esav. The Torah does not give us a clear chronology of time. Then you have the asterisk, other travels of Yaakov, including in Sukkos, Shechem, that's the story with Dina. We don't know exactly when that happened, when Dina was raped by the prince of that town. And then at 108, we know how old Yosef is because we're told at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev that Yosef was 17 when he had his dreams. And so since he was born when Yaakov was 91, he's 108 when he has the dreams, and that's when Yosef is sold. The asterisk after 108 is the mourning that Yaakov has over Yosef. I mean, it takes place for a 22-year period, but there you go. At 120, Yitzchak dies when Yaakov's 120. How do we know this? Because the Torah tells us that Yitzchak was 180 when he dies, and that means that how old is Yaakov when Yitzchak dies? Again, the 60-year gap, so he's 120. And that also means that Yitzchak is alive for a good portion of the time that Yosef is in Egypt. 10 years before Yosef Let me rephrase. 10 years before Yaakov comes down to Egypt, Yitzchak dies. How long is Yosef a ruler in Egypt before Yaakov shows up? 9 years. Which means that a year before Yosef got out of prison is when Yitzchak died. 128 is when the Shnos Hara'av Rishonos, the 2 years of famine, begin. And somewhere in that time, Yaakov's sons come down to Egypt to get food. And at 130, Yaakov comes down to Egypt. At 135, or technically it says here, is the Siyum Shnos Hara'av, the conclusion of the 7 years of famine. It's not clear in the Torah whether the famine actually continued. The rabbis suggest that the famine stopped when Yaakov came down to Egypt, but that's a different conversation. And Yaakov, the final asterisk on the page, talks about the blessings that Yaakov gives to his sons. When does that exactly happen? Probably in Yaakov's last days. So it was probably when he was 147. But anyway, it says Yaakov dies in Egypt, and he is buried in Hebron by his sons. Okay, that's the timeline of Yaakov's life. So now, yes?
I'm so sorry. I understand how these dates are extrapolated, mm-hmm. and I don't mean to ask a weird question, but are we supposed to
memorize this? It's going to be on the test tomorrow.
Are we supposed to understand this literally, like the number of years that these people lived?
Well, that gets into a larger question of how you take the years in the Torah. I have no problem taking these things literally. That's just me. Especially when you deal with, I found a great answer, for example, to the ages of people pre the flood and post the flood. Okay, and that is that the flood changed the atmosphere of the world such that people could no longer live as long as they lived prior. Now, you know, science today will tell you that people died when they were in their 30s, 40s. People didn't live very long. Okay, could be. Could also be that they didn't age. Could be. And insofar as things changing from post-flood, you know, slowly you see people into the hundreds in the Torah, and then you know, eventually not living that long, so much so that we say that Moshe was 120, and people don't really live past that. I mean, we see people living almost that, I mean, rare, but we do see people living, you know, to that amount. Or close to it, I mean. And so, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, obviously, there are some people who will have a problem with it. So we'll leave that for what it is.
Okay. Wait, can you go back? What's 135? I missed.
That would be the end of the famine. Because Yaakov comes down to Egypt when he's 130, 2 years into the famine. And the famine was supposed to be 7 years. So that's a suggestion. There are others who might disagree with that. But if the 7 years of famine actually happened as they were supposed to, then that would be a correct time for when the famine ends. Okay, now, why did I call the title of today's class Yaakov's Struggles? So let me show you Pasuk. We're going to jump around a little bit in the Chumash. So I'll give you the page number. It's at the end of Parsha, towards the end of Parshas Vayigash, page 264. Okay, top of the page. Yaakov comes down to Egypt. In the royal fashion that they have made for them with the wagons that were sent by Paro and by Yosef. And Yosef brings his father before Paro. And it's a whole interesting discussion as to why Paro asks this. You know, it's kind of strange. Yaakov comes before Paro, being brought in by Yosef. You can only imagine what kind of friendship this Paro and Yosef had. Remember, Yosef is the one who interpreted his dreams. Yosef is the one who told him that you're going to become the wealthiest person on the planet. I mean, you're just going to save the world. Paro, in turn, said, you're going to be in charge. I'm going to make you be the guy who's going to oversee everything that we're going to be doing. And what kind of partnership they had. Right? I mean, if you look at the end of Parshas Vayigash, we're not going to look at it, but if you were to look at it, you'll see that people come to Paro saying, hey, there's no food. And Paro says, don't talk to me, go to Yosef. Go to my buddy, he's my guy, that's it. So you can only imagine. So if Yosef brings his father in, what do you expect Paro to say to Yosef's father?
Welcome.
Hey, welcome, so nice to see you. Your son is my best buddy in the world. I mean, we are. It's like in the musical, Joseph, we are a perfect team. Old buddies now, it's you and me. Right? I was wise to have chosen you. You'd be wise to agree. I mean, that's... What a great line. Wouldn't that have been so nice? Listen, it's okay for Paro to be a little arrogant, right? I mean, that's what Paro is. Paro is a little arrogant. It's all right. Say to him, I just, you know, it's so wonderful to meet the father of my guy. And what does he do? Yomer Paro Yaakov, top line, 264. Paro says to Yaakov, whoa, kama yemei shnei chayecha. How old are you, man? You are old. It's crazy. It just means that Yaakov was so striking a figure in a way that, I mean, he just took all the words away. That Paro, I mean, you have to imagine that Paro knows a little diplomacy. I mean, he's got to know something. And yet, that's what he asks. How old are you? Vayomer Yaakov el Paro. So Yaakov says, Yimei shnei migurai, the days of the years of my sojourns, shloshim miyashana, there are 130 years, me'at v'ra'im, hayu yimei shnei chayai, few and bad. I mean, how miserable, right? Hayu were the days of the years of my life, v'lo yisigu es yimei shnei chayai abusai, and they have not reached the lifespans of my forefathers, b'mei migureihem, in the days of their sojourns. Okay, so let me just finish the thought. So you see how Yaakov, upon reflection, towards the end of his life, he's not at the end of his life yet, he's 130 now, he lived 17 years, and the opening of Vayichi says, Vayichi Yaakov, man. So those who've been at the Parsha class, so we've talked a lot about Vayechi, how Yaakov lived in Egypt, and he had like a new lease on life in a sense. But when he got down to Egypt, you have to remember, Yaakov was coming down at the tail end of 22 years of mourning for Yosef. Okay? And what happened right before the mourning for Yosef? Dina was raped, her life ruined. I mean, so you have to just look at those two stories and see how they weighed heavily on this father. So he's looking back at his life, and he's thinking about that, and all the years he lived with Lavan, and even though he has his wives, and he had children, and tried to build something, but the weight of everything that Lavan represented to him in his life. So he's looking back at all that, and prior to that, what did he deal with at home? You know, one parent seems to favor Yaakov. You know, Yaakov had to take a blessing in some underhanded way because his mother told him to, because his father was trying to give it to Esav, even though Yaakov had gotten the rights legally, and we can talk about that in a little bit, but as to how Yaakov got the rights and why he may have felt that he was deserving of getting the blessing, even though he didn't want to take the blessing. His mother said to him, "You're taking it because I'm telling you," but maybe she knew that he had earned the rights. He had earned the rights to it through his dealings with Esau. So Yaakov's looking back on all that and he's saying, I've had a miserable life. A life filled with struggle. So what we're going to do over the rest of the class today is we're going to look at those struggles. That is, that's our goal today. Yeah, Romain.
So I wondered if perhaps, you know, Pharaoh is showing a certain potential empathy by saying that. Not just commenting.
It could be. I mean, there are different interpretations that I've seen. One, the most fascinating to me, which I saw years ago, I think in the Torah Shalema, it's very difficult to fathom, because if you follow the logic of what this viewpoint is saying, it makes this paro extremely old. And what is it? That this paro sees Yaakov, and he has a triggered memory of having seen Avraham in Egypt, and he thinks that this guy Yaakov is Abraham.
Oh, he's got dementia. Oh, nice.
Well, how old was Abraham when he came down?
Yeah,
he was under 100, because it was before the birth of Yitzchak. So he was probably 75. Wow. So that, how long ago was this? Okay, I mean, a long time ago.
Yeah.
If Yaakov is 130, that would mean that Yitzchak would have been 190. Right? 190. And this would have been 25 years before the birth of Yitzchak, which would mean this paro is 215. Now, I know I said before that I have no problem with people living that long, but there's no record of any pharaoh living that long. And they kept records. So I don't have to accept that, because that's an interpretation and an explanation, as opposed to something which the Torah, you know, tells us. But the other possibility is that he just looks at Yaakov, and as old as Yaakov is, he looks even older. And that is,
yeah,
you know, right. Okay, anyway. All right, so, and that's, again, that's the reason why I call the class Yaakov's Struggles, because really, this is a struggle. This is, and Yaakov is certainly reflecting on his own life and saying that there are struggles. Okay, now, before I get into some of the details of the struggles, just wanted to make a couple of points which I think are important to note. Okay? Yeah. There are, I don't remember if I mentioned this here or if it was in the other class, but there is such a concept of what's called Maisa Avos Siman Labanim. Maisa Avos Siman Labanim means that things that happen to the fathers happen to the children. And there are different ways that Maisa Avos Siman Labanim can be demonstrated. One of them is in the shorter term. We see this is true, for example, with Avram and Yitzchak, that Avram has an encounter with Avimelech, and he tells Avimelech that his wife is his sister, and Yitzchak has an encounter with Avimelech, and he tells Avimelech that his wife is his sister. There's a famine in the land in Avram's time. There's a famine in the land in Yitzchak's time. So that's on the more short term. And similarly, if Yaakov has similar experiences to Avram's experience, that would be Maase Avos on the bottom in the short term.
Yeah.
Maase Avos, the deeds or the stories of the fathers, Siman Labanim is a sign for the children. Okay, so again, it could be on a short term, father to son, father to grandson, that whatever happened there will happen there. When Avram comes down to Canaan for the first time, he prays at Shechem. Okay, and later on, Yaakov and his family have a very negative story in Shechem. So that Yaakov, that Avram may have been praying on behalf of what will take place there. Okay, that's a possibility. There's another kind of ma'aseh avosim lebanim, and that is that what happens to the forefathers will happen to the descendants much later on. Hey, yeah, Avram also davens at Ai and Beit El. The Bnei Yisrael, when they come back with Yehoshua, so now we're talking several hundred years later, more than 400 years later, they have significant battles at Ai and Beit El. So that would be a, you know, the story of the father is a precursor or a premonition to what's going to be taking place in the future. Okay, I mean, just very simply, Abraham goes down to, Abraham has a problem in Canaan, he goes down to Egypt. A couple, few hundred years later, right, there's a famine of the land, or there's a famine everywhere, and Yaakov and the family go down to Egypt. Okay, so, you know, it could be something that happens a generation later, or it could be several hundred years later, or even much longer. Yeah. Okay, so just a couple things about Abraham and Yaakov. Okay? Because Abraham had journeys. That's what we saw. That was last week's class, last time's class. And Yaakov also had journeys. But in Yaakov's journeys, there are more struggles. So we're going to look more at the struggles, but I do want you to see the parallels in the Ma'aseh Avosim Lebanim way of Abraham to Yaakov. Okay, yeah, when Avram is first shows up on the scene, and I can kick you around the whole Chumash if you want, we can do it that way. Okay, when Avram first shows up on the scene, that's what I mean. Kick you around. We'll bounce around. Okay. All right. So on page 54, Avram is told in verse Gimel, verse 3, "V'nivruchu v'cha kol mishpachos ha'adama." That all the families of the earth are going to be blessed through you. Yaakov, chapter 28. Here we go. It's the beginning of Parshas Vayetse.
Can you kick a little slower? Okay.
No, I can't kick slower, but I can kick softer. Okay. So it's on page 144. Yaakov is having his dream. With the ladder and the angels going up and down, and in verse 14 on page 144, V'haya zaracha ka'afar aretz, your children will be like the dust of the earth. That's a reference to actually there are a lot of meanings of what that means. It could be numbers. It could be referring to afar aretz, something which will always be there, right? No. Even the atom bomb will not destroy afar aretz, the dust of the earth. Okay, so in other words, it could be that kind of a metaphor. It's obviously a metaphor. It doesn't mean that they are going to turn into dust. It means that they're going to be like the dust. And one of the best interpretations is that they will always be around. You'll be spread across the globe, north, east, south, and west. That is not the chronology of those words. That's the phrase we saw that Avram was told. That the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your children. Okay, so it's a similar kind of a blessing which is given. There's another parallel. If we jump around too much, it's just going to take too long, so I'm not going to do this. When Abraham and Lot realize that the land cannot hold the two of them, Pasuk says, "V'lo nasah ha'aretz osam l'shevas yachdav ki yaruchu sham ra v'lo yachlu l'shevas yachdav." They both had too many sheep. They both had too much property, too much that they owned, and so they decided to separate and split ways. And of course, Lot, as we know, chose to live in the area of Sidon. And Avram stays where he is in the mountains of Hebron. Okay, that's one story. Yaakov, when he encounters Esav in Parshas Vayishlach, right? Esav, 400 men. Esav invites him to live together. And Yaakov says, "Can't do it. I got too much." And Esav has too much. Not only that, but since you're on page 144, if you look at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, to pronounce it correctly, the Torah even tells us on page 192 that the reason why Yaakov and Esav, or a reason, I should say, I don't want to say the reason, but a reason why Yaakov and Esav do not end up living together is Pasuk Zayin, verse 7 on page 192. Ki ayaruch usham rav mishevas yachdav lo yachala eretz megorayim l'seizu sam p'nei b'kneihem and so vayeshev eisev har seir. They had too much, and the land could not. You know, there's the old bully line. There ain't here for the two of us. There ain't room here for the two of us. So that's the way it is with Yaakov and Esav. There wasn't room for the two of them, and so Yaakov lives in the inheritance of the forefathers, and Esav moves to Mount Seir. Mount Seir, I believe, is south of the Dead Sea. That's the Seir / Edom area. Later on, when the Israelites going out of Egypt, they're supposed to go around Mount Seir and around Edom, not to fight with the Edomites. Why? Cousins. We don't fight with them. We don't touch them. And they go around Edom, and there's no battle, in fact, with Edom at that time. They have similar instructions against Moab, the Altatzaras Moab. Don't make war with Moab. But Moab aligns itself with Midian, and there's a whole battle with Midian, and that's the story of Bilam and Balak. So anyway, different conversation. But you see that just like Abraham and Lot didn't have enough room for the two of them, Yaakov and Esav didn't have enough room for the two of them, and so they separated. Okay, now with respect to the wives. So I mentioned before that Abraham played a game in which he would tell the king where he was a guest, whether it was Egypt and Paro or Gerar and Abimelech, he would say that she is my sister. Okay, and Yaakov has similar kinds of problems with his wives, not on account of having to hide their identity, because that was never a question, but with respect to Lavan playing the game of who's the wife, the sister, right? Yaakov is supposed to marry Rachel, and what does Lavan do? Takes the sister and sticks her in there, Leah, and Leah becomes Yaakov's wife. Not only that, Lavan's explanations for why he does this is crazy. A, why he does that in the first place, but also when Yaakov tries to leave at the end of Parshas Vayetze, take a look at this. Let's go back to page 160. So we have in verse 24, one of the way that Paro doesn't figure out that Sarai is Abram's wife. What happens is Vayinaga Hashem es Paro negoim gedolim v'yaspeso. Paro and Paro and his household. I don't remember. Let me just double check. I did quote it correctly. Vayinaga Hashem es Paro negoim gedolim v'yaspeso al dvar Sarai eshet Avram. That Paro and his household are all struck with some kind of disease, which some call venereal disease. I don't know, but it says negaim gedolim, which the article translates to be severe plagues. And Paro says, hey, he figures it out, but he isn't told that she's his wife. In Avimelech's case, when Avram goes to Gerar, God appears to Avimelech in the middle of the night and says to him, you're a dead man because you took this man's wife. And he said, well, she said, they said that they're brother and sister, and God says, doesn't matter, your family, your household, everybody's is going to be struck with some kind of a plague, but you have to return the wife to the man, and then he'll pray for you because he's a Navi, he's a prophet, and everything will be fine. So Avimelech says, okay, but I wasn't me, I didn't really do anything, I just, I wasn't, I'm innocent, Your Honor. Anyway, so there you see that God appears to Avimelech. So look in verse 24 here, on page 164. V'yavo elokim el Lavan arami b'chalam alayla. So God appears to Lavan and says to him, Yishama lecha, be careful, penetaber miyakov mitobi adra, lest you speak with Yaakov poorly. And then when he shows up, when they actually meet, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, 31. Lavan accuses. No, I'm sorry. Let's start with 26. Laban accuses Yaakov, Chavav. He says, why did you steal my heart and you took my daughters like captives? You think that Yaakov took Laban's daughters like captives? I mean, that's crazy. They're his wives and they wanted to go with him. Why did you run away? You didn't tell me. I would have sent you with all kinds of. I would have sent you with a marching band. Chavchas 28. Lo netashtani l'nashev l'anai l'nasai. You didn't let me kiss anybody. I could have done harm to you, he says in 29, but your God told me not to. And then Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Yaakov says, "Vayan Yaakov, Vayomer Lavan, Ki Aresi, Ki Amarti, Pentigzol Espinosecha Mei Mi." It's the same thing that Avram said. Avram said to Avimelech, well, not exactly the same, but Avram said to Avimelech that I was afraid that you were going to kill me over my wife. Yaakov was saying, I was afraid that you're going to steal my daughters away from me. Your daughters, rather. Your daughters, my wives, away from me. And so he responds to Yaakov's other charge about his, to Laban's other charge about his stealing the things which Laban was looking for, his trophim. Okay, which we know that Rachel took, but that's also a different story. Yeah.
22, 165, God comes to Laban and he says, beware lest you speak with Jacob, either good or bad. So he's actually saying, don't talk to him.
Yeah, he's basically saying.
He said bad, don't. But he's basically, what does that mean? Don't talk to him at all.
Or, well, either that or mitovad ra could be a spectrum, right? In other words, don't go from good and switch it all over to bad. Could be. I'm just offering a different way to look at it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he didn't say to him, don't continue your pursuit of Yaakov and turn around please and go home. He doesn't say that. He does say, be careful about what you say.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And that's also because sometimes the good that you say is really bad. And that's just something to think about. All right, anyway, so that's another parallel between Abraham and Yaakov. Another one is that they both get their names changed, and there's an explanation attached to their name being changed. Abraham's name is changed from Abraham to Abraham. Yaakov's name is changed from Yaakov to Yisrael. And the last thing is, the last major parallel is the feeling of loss over their child. And that is, with Avram's case, it was the build-up to the Akedah, even though he doesn't actually kill Yitzchak. Although, what we do know is that Avram may have never seen Yitzchak again in his life. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating thing to consider. But if you read through the Psukim, Yitzchak is not at Sarah's funeral. And while Avram concerns himself with Yitzchak's marriage and assigns Eliezer to find Yitzchak's wife, we do not see in the Torah Avram and Yitzchak talking to each other, which is suggestive if in fact Yitzchak took the Akedah personally, which is fascinating. Okay, again, we don't know, but that's just something to think about. And Yaakov, of course, is mourning over Yosef for 22 years. Okay, so it's a snapshot of how we look at the story of Yaakov in light of the background that he has from his grandfather Abraham. And what that translates to is a similar kind of life. I mean, there's what to be said about. I once heard a comedian say, I woke up one morning, I was 55 years old, I got out of bed, and I looked into the mirror and I saw my father. Yeah. It's like there's. What? You saw your father?
I saw my mother.
Oh, your mother.
I looked
Thank God.
And
okay.
Said, why is my mother looking?
Right, exactly. So there is what to be said about that being a component of people's experience. But insofar as Yaakov goes, Yaakov is unique. Why is Yaakov unique from Abraham and his father Yitzchak? Well, very different children and very different life stories. Yitzchak never left the land of Canaan. Yitzchak was called an Ola Tzvima. He was a pure sacrifice in the way that he was put on the Akedah. That is not an experience that Yaakov had at all. And just the idea of the journey that Avram took, for example, leaving his household in order to become this great monotheist and this leader of a new nation, that is not the experience that Yaakov had. Yaakov did have to leave his household, but for totally different reasons. And it was, and I once saw something about the difference between Yaakov and Yitzchak in terms of spouse. Sometimes the spouse comes to meet you, right, in Canaan, and that's what Rivka came to Yitzchak, and sometimes you got to go out to find the spouse, which is what Yaakov did to meet, you know, to find Rachel and Leah as well, even though he hadn't intended to marry Leah. Okay, so that's, again, I mean, it's an overview. It's hard to get to everything, but let's look at a few struggles that Yaakov has, and I'll just make very quick comments on them because in the interest of time. So again, we're going to bounce around. I'm not going to kick you around this time, but we're going to bounce around. Okay, so take a look. We'll start at the beginning of Yaakov's experience, page 124. Yaakov, or maybe I should say 126. Okay, Rivka, as we know, is struggling with her pregnancy. And when the two boys are born, Yaakov is holding on to Esau's heel. Now, I don't know how that works in terms of birth. I do know that the head is supposed to come out first, and when the hand comes out first, that's not so great. So I'm not entirely sure as to how that goes down. But Yaakov is doing that. Why? So the rabbis say that Yaakov was supposed to be born first, but because of all the struggling that's taking place, Esav came out. I don't know what that means, to have babies know these things so well, but we'll leave that for one struggle. And the next struggle which they have is on the bottom page, 126, when Esav comes in from the field and he's exhausted, Yaakov's cooking something, and Esav says, excuse me, Halitaini na, we're on verse 30, on page 126, Pasuk Lamed. Esav says, Halitaini na min adam adam zakeyev anocha kein karash moedom. He says, can you pour this red stuff? Basically, he says, pour it down my throat because I'm exhausted. And Yaakov says, Mikra chayom is b'chora zechali, which some people say to mean, Mikra means to sell, but Mikra can also mean value. As we know from the first verse in Eish Eschayil, Eish Eschayil mi yimsa v'rachok mipninim. What's the next word? Oh, you're always listening, you're never singing. Okay. Eish Eschayil mi, Eish Eschayil mi yimsa v'rachok mipninim mikra. What's mikra? Her value. Her value far surpasses that of pninim. Pninim are pearls. Okay, mikra. So mikra could mean the value of your bechorah is going to be transferred to me, because Esav has indicated that whatever the value of the bechorah is, of the birthright, is meaningless to him. So Yaakov says, I'll take it, no problem. And Esav says, no problem. Esav says, what do I need the birthright for? I'm going to die. And Esav does not mean I'm going to die now. He means, I'm going to die because I am a free spirit. I am dealing with dangerous stuff all the time. And I will probably not outlive my father. So if I can get paid for the Bechorah now, I'll take it. No problem. And what is it? What happens is, by Yomer Yaakov, next page, 128, by Yomer Yaakov, Yishava li kayom, by Yishava lo, he swore to me, and he swore to him, by Yimkoras Bechorah sol Yaakov. Some of the commentaries say, by Yimkor means he sold it to Yaakov. What does that mean? That Yaakov gave him the cash. Whatever that means, I don't know what kind of cash Yaakov had. But by Yimkor means he sold him the cash. He sold him the rights to the birthright for money. And then Yaakov, Nasan la Esav lechem mezunachin, Yaakov gave to Esav bread and the food, and that was just what I like to call a meal to seal the deal. Okay, a meal to seal the deal over a transaction which was a legitimate transaction that Esav agreed to. And not only that, the end of that little paragraph, Vayivez Esav es habechorah, last words, Esav denigrated the birthright, burned it. He didn't care about it. So for Esav to come back later and say, he tricked me out of it, you know, you were of sound mind and body. You may have been young and naive and stupid, but you were of sound mind and body. You weren't tricked. You agreed to it. So you can go back and regret your own stupidity, but you can't say, Yaakov tricked me. And later on, of course, that's what Esav does. Now, the next chapter is the Yitzchak chapter, which I said we're not going to touch upon. But take a look at Yaakov's next struggle. And it goes to page 134. Okay? Remember, Yitzchak tells Esav, I want you to go prepare some food for me so that I can give you a blessing. Rivka overhears this, and she gives Yaakov instructions about what he's supposed to do to get goats. Goats. Interesting, later on, goats are used to hide the sale of Yosef. Remember? Mm-hmm. Here, Yaakov puts on goat skins and Esav's coat. This is what Rabbi David Foreman calls goats and coats. Goats and coats. Okay? And that happens here to do one kind of trickery, and the goats and coats with Yosef's coat and the goats that the brothers, the goat that the brothers slaughter in order to put the blood on the coat to tell Yaakov, look what we've achieved. Yaakov, that we found Yosef. So he talks about the goats and coats being a theme of the two tricking stories, how it comes back to bite Yaakov. But I'm not going to go through his analysis. We don't have the time. But look at Yaakov's struggle, because his mother says to him, I want you to do this. I'm going to prepare the food before your father dies. He wants to give a blessing. The bottom page 134. Yanochi ish chalak. Esav is hairy. I am not hairy. Maybe my father is going to feel me, and I'm going to be in his eyes like a trickster, and I will bring upon me a blessing and not a blessing. So one of the I've seen a few commentaries note that the word ulai means maybe. There's another word in the Torah that means maybe, and that word is pen. What's the difference between pen and ulai? Pen is an outcome that a person does not want to have. Like Paro says, pen your bet. Maybe the Israelites are going to become numerous, and then they're going to fight against us, and who knows what's going to happen. Pen, you don't want to happen. Ulai is something you do want to happen. So what is Yaakov saying? I want my father to feel me. So he'll see that I'm a trickster, and I'll put an end to this whole charade. I don't want to be a part of this. Why does he go ahead with it? Kibud, aim, because he's honoring his mother, because his mother is telling him, you have to do this. But that's Yaakov. And Yaakov, the way he goes through it, and there are different commentaries who explain that Yaakov, in saying the things which he says to his father, how he isn't lying, maybe he is lying. There are different views on it. But remember that all that's driving Yaakov's behavior here, no matter how you look at it, whether you agree with what Yaakov does or don't agree with it, is because his mother told him to do so. Okay. We touched a little bit on the struggles that Yaakov has with Laban. I mean, that you have to just see that last encounter that we looked at, but we didn't look at it in its totality, where Yaakov says to Laban things like, you know, why have I been so miserable here? Because I was out in the freezing cold and I was out in the boiling hot, and you change my wages all the time, not to give me a raise, by the way. You mess things around. You lied to me. You cheated me. Everything you could have possibly done to make my life miserable, you did. And guess what? The only reason why I survived, the only reason why I made it through all that, is because I've got Ribbono Shel Olam on my side. Yaakov had a very deep faith and a connection to God, which allowed him to make his way through the different struggles which Laban faced with him. And remember, we reflect upon this at the Seder. Remember, Paro lo gazar el al zacharim. Paro decreed to throw the males into the Nile, but not all the males. Just the new ones, just the babies. The Laban bikesh lakor es hakol. And Laban wanted to uproot everything. Why? What's Paro trying to do? Physical annihilation. But as one midrash says about the enemies of the Jewish people who tried to destroy the ancestry of the Jewish people, the Haman is the one who looks at Paro and says, you idiot. You kill the boys, but guess what? Judaism is transferred through the women. So you're not really helping anything. The way you get rid of the Jewish people is by killing everybody. And that's what Haman tries to do. Of course, you know, how much time does it take from the time Haman makes his decree until he's dead? That's a fun little note that we kind of forget. Anybody know?
3 days?
Yeah, 3 or 4 days maximum. Which is, you know, in the scheme of things, hilarious. I mean, not you know, not nice for his family, but whatever. Anyway, so that's Yaakov with Laban. Laban tried to do everything because he wanted to get to the spirit. He wanted to get to the spirit, and of course, in trying to destroy, and that was the Paro answer, right? You want to kill, you want to destroy Yaakov, but you waited until after he had children. So if you do that, better is to kill the children, and therefore, that's again, it's an interesting midrash, which I'm not going to go into any more. I've already given you a lot of details, but I'm not going to go into more detail now. All right, that's one. And so the last two struggles are also ones which I mentioned. The Esav one is more, I would say, in Parshas Vayishlach, it's more in Yaakov's mind, the struggle with Esav, because, at least insofar as the way the Torah presents it, when Esav does come in contact with Yaakov, Esav is nothing short of magnanimous. I mean, he says to Yaakov, "Oh, look at this beautiful family you have. Why don't you guys come live with us? It's so beautiful to see what you built. Fantastic." He gives him a hug. He gives him a kiss. I know there are dots over the word that says "Vayishakei" and gave him a kiss. And some say that he tried to bite him and kill him. Whatever. Okay, that's possible. But in any case, the way the Torah presents it, Esav is just Mr. Charming. And so, to me, that's less of a struggle. It's more Yaakov's buildup that he didn't know what the 400 men that Esav was coming were for. Were they coming to fight? Were they coming to kill? Who knows? So we'll leave that for one kind of struggle. But the other kinds of struggle which Yaakov has in the course of Parshas Vayishlach are a struggle with an angel. That's where he gets the name Yisrael from. You struggled with man and with God and you overcame. So that becomes that's the story of the Jewish people. That's what Yisrael means. And that is the story of the Jewish people until today. Right? How many people have questions about God? How many people look at the world and say, everybody hates the Jews, why are we sticking with it? We're so few, why don't we just disappear and assimilate like everybody else? And we have, each of us has our own answer to that question, but that's a struggle with man and God, is it not? I think that's what it is. And that's Yaakov's legacy for us. And we overcome. In the end of the day, we're proud to be Jews. We only want to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. We, you know, have a feeling for Eretz Yisrael and the Jewish people around the world. That's just who we are. Okay? That's a legacy that Yaakov gave us. And the other two struggles are they're all familial struggles. One is, I shouldn't say two, because there were more. There's Shechem, what happens with Dinah. There's the death of Rachel, and the birth of Binyamin, which is very difficult. And of course, there's the loss of Yosef for 22 years, plus what happens with Binyamin. We're going to talk more about the brothers next week. So I'll leave Yosef aside for next week, and just focus on these two components of Shechem, and meaning Dinah, and Rachel. Yes?
Is there not another struggle that Yaakov has, which is a struggle between being a very, very clever man, no matter how clever he is, travails, because he really is a very sharp guy. He knows how to get in and out of situations, but nonetheless, his travails continue.
For sure, any person has many struggles in life. What I'm trying to do today is focus on particular incidents which were devastating to Yaakov. I mean, I'll give you an example. Trying to remember, you know, there's, I don't remember what the film group is, but it's probably some Christian film group. So they made a bunch of Bible story films, and you can find them on YouTube. One is about David, one is about Moses, one is about Joseph. So the one about Joseph is fascinating because I never even thought about this. But remember when Yosef is accused by Potiphar's wife, right? That whole story. And when he ran away, we know nothing happened. So, from the time that I really understood the story, I always viewed Potiphar as not really believing his wife. And saying, you know, she's... Like, he knew who she was, okay? But he also had to throw Yosef in jail because, you know, slave versus master's wife, obviously she wins. Right? Just like Tom Robinson in To Kill a Mockingbird. Right? Black man in the South versus... some white trash person who's accusing him of something that he didn't do. Well, obviously, the white person is not telling a lie, obviously. So it's the same thing there. So in the movie, Potiphar, who's played by Ben Kingsley, who in a different movie plays Moses, which is funny. Anyway, so he says to Yosef, what happened? Because I really trust you. And we know that he trusted him. And Yosef, Joseph's character says, I know all about what it means to respect women. And he goes on to have a flashback to the story of Shechem and what happened to his sister. This is fascinating. I had never thought of things from that perspective. So that's just eye-opening. Again, whether that actually happened, I don't know. But the story with Yaakov and when Shechem shows up with his father and saying, hey, you want to marry Dinah? Yaakov is silent. He does not deal with it at all. Why? He doesn't say anything. He waits until his sons come home. Because, I mean, can you imagine? The Torah doesn't give us a reason why Yaakov is silent. But we see that Yaakov shuts down. Okay, we can call it, we have all the psychological terminology now. Trauma, I mean, I'll just throw that one in there. He just doesn't know how to deal with this. And then shortly after that, we see that Yaakov comes up and Devorah dies, which means that his mother died. Okay, that's what everybody says. That when Devorah dies, that means that his mother died. So he never gets to see his mother again. The last time he saw his mother was when they sent him away to Lavan's house, which is now... So he left at 63. Now he's 97. Over 30-something years, he hasn't seen his mother. Now he finds out he's never going to see his mother. His mother has died. And then shortly after that, we're told about the deaths of Rachel and how devastating that was for Yaakov as well. And that led to, what we can say is really the last story before the brothers really take over is the incident of Reuven and Bilhah. And what's the incident of Reuven with Bilhah? So that's an interesting question. The Torah says that Reuven, Vayishkav es Bilhah Pilegesh Aviv Vayishma Yisrael, that Reuven lay with Bilhah. So what does that mean? I can give a whole shiur on that topic, but obviously I'm not going to do that now. But what ends up happening as a result is Vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar, that Yaakov's sons were 12. So one interpretation which I found to be compelling is that what Reuven did is that he lay on the bed. Whether he slept with Bilhah or didn't sleep with Bilhah doesn't matter to me. The main thing is that Yaakov heard about it, and as a result, Yaakov, because a view is that what Reuven was concerned about was that just like Avram had gotten rid of Ishmael, just as Yitzchak got rid of Esau, and Avram had thrown all the sons of Keturah off to the east, that Reuven was concerned that somebody was going to be gotten rid of in the family. And he wasn't sure who it was. So he said, you know what, let me make it that there will not be any more children, because a nation has to start with 12, which we know from the Nachor family, we know from the Ishmael family, and we actually know kind of from the Esau family, that there are 12, and that's how you start a nation. And Reuven says, look, if we have 12, we're good. But if Yaakov has any more children, and he may want to have another child after the death of Rachel, he just may want to have like a, you know, because who knows what's ever going to happen. So who knows? So Reuven does what he does in order to get Yaakov to not be with Bilhah anymore. Because maybe Yaakov was done with Leah, and Yaakov was done with Zilpah, could be. But Bilhah was his connection to Rachel. And so what happens as a result is that there are 12 sons of Yaakov, and that's it. And so a perspective is that after this, Yaakov was celibate for the rest of his life. Not interested anymore. And as I once heard Rabbi Tendler share, he says, so why is Reuven punished later on for trying to preserve the unit of 12 so there shouldn't be anybody else? He says, because you have no right to get between a man and his wife, and that's what Reuven did. So this is another struggle which Yaakov had. Do I know for sure that Yaakov was celibate for the rest of his life? I have no idea. Does it matter? It doesn't matter. We know what the tribes of Israel are, but we see that Yaakov just had to deal with an impetuousness that Reuven demonstrated here, and Yaakov carried as a scar for the rest of his life, because Yaakov says at the end of his life, Reuven b'choriyat kochi b'reishis ani, you went on your father's bed. Well, when did that happen? That happened so many years ago. Well, Yaakov still remembers it, because again, it's trauma. And so Yaakov, through all the amazing things we have about Yaakov, we see that Yaakov is a very real person. A real person with all kinds of struggles, but the legacy that Yaakov leaves us is the one which is his new name. And that is the one which I mentioned before, but I'll just leave us with. And that is that he turns out to be Israel. What do we call ourselves now? Do we call ourselves Am Yaakov? Or do we call ourselves
Am
Israel? Because that is who we are. And that's the legacy that Yaakov gave us. We're going to struggle. That's part of life. But our job is to take a lesson from Yaakov. You struggle with man, you struggle with God, and you overcome. And it's the opposite. Remember, who was the first person who struggled? Maybe Adam and Chava. But the real struggle was Cain and Hevel. And God even says to Cain, you're upset, you're jealous, get over it. You can beat it. And what does Cain do? No, I can't. And he kills his brother. Yaakov does the opposite. He says, I'm not killing my brother. I'm going to get along with my brother, even though we have our conflict. And I'm going to embrace my children, even though they give me difficulty. And I'm going to do what I can to overcome and to become a father of a nation. That's Yaakov's struggle, and that's our legacy.
Wow. Thank you so much. I just want to go over the schedule.